The Great Barrier Reef needs to be fighting fit to cope with climate change. While the world takes action to address climate change, improving water quality is the best thing we can do to increase the reef's resilience. Runoff from the neighbouring catchment can cause all sorts of problems when pollutants end up in delicately balanced reef ecosystems. In this podcast series, we talk to farmers, scientists, extension officers, and local experts to hear their water quality perspectives.
My name is Dr. Ryan Turner, and I'm the principal scientist for Water Quality Investigations, and we coordinate and manage the water quality monitoring in all our catchments, rivers, creeks and streams for Paddock to Reef program. My background started with a private company doing some consulting in the water space and soil space. And then I found a job with the Queensland Government running their waters laboratory. I started back in 2006 doing analysis for the Paddock to Reef program, and then in 2009 I became the program leader for the water quality monitoring program.
Do you find this work rewarding?
Yeah, passion has always been to ensure water quality. Water is for industry, it's for life, it's for agriculture. We need water to live. To ensure the quality of water is to ensure the future for us. So that's my passion, to make sure we have the best water in Australia.
Can you talk about the context of the work you do and how that relates to water quality in the reef lagoon?
Yeah, so the team and I, we manage a program which monitors rivers, creeks and streams that export to the Great Barrier Reef Lagoon. We're monitoring a point in the river. We don't point the finger at anybody. Anybody above that point in the river is contributing pollutants to that river. But what is a good point of truth? It's a lot of data, actual samples that are taken out of creeks and rivers and streams. And we can present that data to landholders, to industry, to universities, agencies, and it gives some foundational data for the status of our streams and rivers. And then that data is then used to underpin and support source catchment modelling, which is a part of the Paddock to Reef program. But our data is also used for many other things. It's used for regional report cards to tell the status of those catchments, the current state of the water quality. It's been used by the UN in the OECD reports. It's been used by the Bureau of Meteorology for modelling, eReef, so it's heavily utilised and it becomes a bit of a foundational data set, a point of truth for where people can make decisions or they can look at areas where there might be investment or improvements required to improve water quality.
If I went to one of those locations where the monitoring's happening, what would I see?
Yeah, so some of our locations are manual. It's the old classic bottle on a pole. We're dipping into water at a point in time when we do a bit of recording. And then our state-of-the-art is a double-walled cyclone-proof shed. Has solar panels, batteries, has a lot of scientific equipment in it. So we have things called auto samplers, which is basically like a fancy Waco fridge. Some people have a Waco fridge in the back of their utes, and we have them in the sheds. We have some probes. They're like, I guess, a cylinder that we stick into the water, and they have little devices that measure the different parameters or the different types of pollutants that we find in the water. And then all of those bits of equipment connected to the internet, and we see all that data in real time. And then what happens is the actual physical samples that are collected by those fancy Waco fridges, those auto samplers, people go there and they collect them, process them, and we send them to the laboratories. Which are NADA accredited for Australia. We then get data back and we can use both the probe data that's in situ in those rivers and the lab data to then do some of our calculations and help support our reef plan.
What are the main things you're looking for in the water?
Primarily we're looking for sediment, so that's how dirty the water is. We call it total suspended solids. We're looking for phosphorus and nitrogen, which are nutrients, and we look at the various breakdowns of those compounds. And then we also look for things called pesticides, and so they are things like fungicides, herbicides or insecticides that are used in catchments.
Can you tell us how those substances get into the river?
All of those substances, besides pesticides, are both naturally occurring and also what we call anthropogenic or human introduced. So they're applied on the land for various reasons, either as fertilizer or as a chemical to do something, control a weed. And generally, the most common way is through rainfall and runoff. But there's lots of other mechanisms that get them into the waterways, but that's the most common way.
You have a lot of opportunities to meet people throughout Queensland and talk to them about these issues. Can you share your experiences talking to people about water quality?
When I started to do shed meetings or town meetings or town hall meetings, there was a lot of reluctance to acknowledge that there might be an issue. Since 2009, and it's a credit to the industry, it's a credit to growers themselves, that they've really come on board. They see that they're a part of the issue and they're also a part of the solution. So there's been a journey. I would say there's some regions that are much further ahead in the reef plan world in making sure that they're really good stewards and they know what their footprint is in the catchment. And there's some other regions that probably have a way to go. But I think the most encouraging thing is reef plan and paddock to reef is an opportunity for everybody to get around the table. It's the grower, the politician, the scientists, the universities, the industry bodies. Everybody's allowed to get around the table and look at the data and have comment and steer us in the right direction. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't want to look after the reef. And sometimes it just takes a bit of information, a bit of data to bring somebody that's doing something on the land to realise that they actually have an impact. Everything we do in a catchment, whether it be, I don't know, growing your own personal roses to producing something like cane or grains, everything has a footprint. And all we're trying to do is get people to have the smallest pollutant footprint that we can through best management practice and to minimise those constituents going into the waterways and therefore improving water quality and therefore helping the resilience of the reef for the future.
When you go to those shed meetings, what are some of the comments that you hear that reflect scepticism?
Yeah, so the classic one I always hear is, oh, well, it comes all out of the rainforest. And that is true. There's nitrogen and phosphorus and sediment coming out of rainforests. Australia is an eroded country. It's an old country. So we have sediment generation. We have these beautiful sand islands off our coast because of that. But what is very evident, and it's evident in our data, let alone the modelling, let alone the scientific consensus statement, is there's significant increases of those naturally occurring compounds, nitrogen, phosphorus and sediment coming out. And that is because we have modified our land.
Ryan, we've heard a lot of farmers talk about the issue of modelling and concerns about how that's done. Do you say to farmers when you meet them to reassure them about the way modelling works?
Yeah, so modelling has its place. It's important. It allows us to forecast, hindcast. It allows us to assess where we might invest. Modelling is underpinned by monitoring, and the monitoring has got some foundational data sets. But the interesting thing is, it's sort of like a relationship. You can't just have modelling and you can't just have monitoring. Where we do monitor and where the models also predict, they're quite close, they're quite accurate. And it's really encouraging that there's multiple lines of evidence, not just from our data, but from other types of monitoring, from other sources of information that are also backing up what the models are saying. Yes, the models can always improve, and that's what they do. Every 5 years, we enhance the models. We get more data, more understanding, we improve them, we get better resolution. But if we didn't have models, I guarantee you we wouldn't be able to be as far ahead of trying to resolve this issue of improving water quality, because we'd only have tiny little snapshots in the state. So modelling is important, and it's as important as monitoring. You need both. And for anybody to say you need one or the other, I truly disagree. You need to have both. And the encouraging thing is they work well together.
And how do we help growers who want to know what's happening in their paddock? They want hard evidence from their own local area.
I guess there's a couple of things they can do. The easiest would be to do their own local water quality monitoring program. The benefit of that is they'll get some instantaneous data. So they could use probes, some simple turbidity or conductivity probes. They can use dipsticks to look at how much nitrogen's in their water. They can get fancier and get more complicated and use some high-tech gear. Or they can run programs like Project 25 or Sandy Creek Project or the Herbert Water Quality Monitoring Program, where they use laboratory-based analysis. So it's a smaller, finer resolution scale of our bigger program. And we can help them train and get them standard operating procedures. That's probably the most robust way to do it. But the cool thing, if they do go down that path, is then there's a data set that they can then supply to the modelers. And that data set can help the models tune for their catchment, for their specific unique topography, climatology, their soil types. And with that, the models can be more in tune for their reason, and then they can forecast, hindcast, and look at different scenarios. And they can be part of the paddock to reef story.
Can you share some examples of projects that are happening now where you've really seen change or improvements?
Yeah, so a couple. Some that have been official projects, like the Sandy Creek program. So for a few years, I was going, giving shed meetings, and then on, I think it was a late afternoon, just before I was about to jump on a plane, 12 farmers said, oh, we've had enough. We're tired of the bad news story. We want to get and find out where these issues are. So these 12 farmers took it upon themselves, with some support from Queensland Government in our program, to sample and to see where the hotspots in their catchments were. And that's been encouraging, because some farmers now, in their own initiative, have implemented some changes, because they realised that they might not have been the worst case scenario in their catchment, but they did actually have an impact. They did have a footprint. And so they've installed sediment traps. Some farmers have stopped using chemicals because they move too quickly and get off their catchment into the waterways, and they've chosen more environmentally friendly chemicals. So that's one example. I've seen simple stories where Tully Sugar have been very proactive. When they saw some of our data from our program on a chemical called imidacloprid, they realised that this was going to be a problem. And they took it upon themselves as an industry body to promote better use of this chemical. And in that region, in the Tully region, we haven't seen a major spike in that chemical. So that's a promising outcome, where the data's informed some proactive management change. There's quite a lot out there. It's interesting that when you give farmers or growers some data and they can resonate with it, they actually do make change. They realise, oh yeah, I'm a part of that story, and they don't want to lose their chemicals, they don't want to have an impact, and they will, to the best of their ability, improve something so that those nutrients and those pesticides and sediments stay on their paddock.
The challenge of sharing science about water quality is a good microcosm for the broader challenge of sharing science with the public. Do you have any insights about the ways, as a scientist, we can do a better job of explaining complex scientific issues?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question to answer. I'm not very good at it myself. Scientists are awesome at detail, fine detail, being precise, being accurate. But the people in the industries and the growers and the general public, they need the science condensed in a format that engages them and gets them on board. And once you've done that, then they will go and find that detail. And it's a hard thing for a scientist not to put all the facts and figures out in front, because you want to defend your position. But as long as you've got those facts and figures and that detail, and you put a message that can engage your audience, that can get them on the journey that you want them to be a part of, then you can talk about the detail. So I think sometimes we complicate things too much, because it's a complicated story. It's a very complicated story. But you'll lose people too quickly. Sometimes to tell a simplified message is more powerful than losing somebody because you've just put 1,000 bits of data and 1,000 diagrams in front of them. So, I sometimes think us scientists aren't the best communicators. And we could all learn how to condense what we have and to convey it in a way to engage. And once you get that engagement, growers especially, they're innovative people. They are, in their own right, scientists of the land. They're tweaking this tractor and this boom rig and looking at different chemicals to use to manage a situation. They get it. But we need to get them on that journey, and sometimes we go in with the wrong approach.
What are the big priorities for your team in the next few years?
Our big priorities is to make our data more available. So we were lucky enough to get a massive expansion. So we've doubled our size and our number of monitoring sites, which is awesome for everybody. There's more data available to make better decisions. I'm a true believer that unless you monitor and evaluate, you can't manage. And we're trying to manage a very complex natural resource, and we need the data to manage that. So getting our data out, because it's not just going to be paddock to reef that will help make these changes. It'll be industry, it'll be the private sector. And so if we make our data more accessible, I'm hoping there'll be a groundswell of students, of universities, of industries to start using that and coming up with some out-of-the-box and lateral thinking ideas to help build the resilience of the reef and improve water quality.